Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all that, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, it's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. Different articles that you can read or download at later times and share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Always interesting things being put in the marketplace all the time. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make it one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:08 here in the city of Philadelphia on June the 19th on a steamy Friday evening here, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode here on Time for an Awakening. Anything that's on your mind, give us a call. We'll talk about it. And you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Today, I'm kind of, I know this is supposed to be a celebratory moment, but I'm kind of, I'm feeling or walking through the blues right now. Yeah.
Well, listen, I want you to hold that thought because I want to explore that. why are you walking through the blues? I want to explore that. It should be interesting. But before we do that, I want to, and I meant to read this last week because I didn't see it in United States news or press, any of the mainstream press. I saw it in Al Jazeera. I first saw that the African Union in the UN's first session back because of COVID-19, the African Union sent a letter that they wanted to address this blatant racism and police brutality on African descended people living in America. They wanted to address it at the UN. They wanted to do it first thing before any other business was taken care of. They wanted to have a session around it. They were sending a formal letter as a request to do this. Later on in Al Jazeera, on the 13th of June, let me read this publication out of Al Jazeera. African Nations Call for Racism Debate. at UN Human Rights Council. African countries called on Friday on the United Nations Human Rights Council to urgently debate racism and police brutality amid the unrest in the United States. In a written letter on behalf of 54 African countries, Burkina Faso ambassador to the UN in Geneva asked the UN's top rights body for an urgent debate on racially inspired human rights violations, police brutality against people of African descent, and the violence against the peaceful protests that call for these injustices to stop. The letter addressed to the rights president, Elizabeth Tichy Filsberg of Austria, requested that the debate be held next week when the council's 43rd session resumes after it was interrupted in March due to COVID-19 pandemic. The case, the call came after George Floyd's family, along with families of the other victims of police violence, and more than 600 of this week called on the council to urgently address systematic racism and police brutality with impunity in the U.S. The council is to consider such a request as it needs to have the backing of at least one country. With the request now coming from a large group of states, that increases the chance that it will take place, the council spokesman told Al Jazeera Press. Friday's letter pointed to the case of George Floyd, 46-year-old black man who died in police custody in Minneapolis on May 25th. Since then, it was approved by the council, and they did have the sessions. I think I did see in one of the United States papers that George Floyd's sister, I think, and his brother spoke. I don't know whether you saw that, Richard.
That was the commission in Geneva.
Exactly. Now, that made the paper that they spoke before that body. Mm-hmm. The initial request by the African countries and the answer from that UN body wasn't, I didn't see it in any American press. I saw it in Al Jazeera. Well, the reason I'm saying that is the Secretary General of the African Union, Mr. Kwasi Kwarteh, Commissioner Deputy Chair of the African Union, wanted to speak to black folks in America after that, right after that debate, or right after the sessions that was held in the UN. They'll be doing that this Sunday, and he wanted to do it. He contacted the president of Abebe Toomey, who Time for an Awakening is in partnership with, because a lot of the products and all, and some of the classes from professors on both the continent and here are on Time for Awakening site. They wanted to do this address on black media. I was contacted, so we're going to broadcast his statement, why the African Union got involved in this, why it was necessary for them to address this before the world, and to field some questions. He wanted a 30-minute address to talk about why this was done. This will be aired on Time for an Awakening Media and also the Black Talk Radio Network this Sunday at noon. I think he's will be speaking from the Sudan, if I'm not mistaken. I'll look at the paper again, Richard. I think it's 7 o'clock there, but it'll be 12 o'clock here. So we'll be airing the address this Sunday at 12. After the 30-minute address, questions will be fielded by myself, Brother Richard, and four other panelists. Their names are written here. If I can find them, Dr. Cambon, I guess he will be, I know that he's hosting it on a BB Toomey. and it also will be streamed not only on the BB Toomey, but on Time for an Awakening, also the Black Talk Radio Network. Dr. Cambine, I assume, will ask questions. Brother Phil Scott, Baba Phil Scott of the African Diaspora News, will be asking questions. Baba Shaka Ra of the Akibalan Revivalist Movement will be involved in some of the question and answer session. Nigel Stewart of the Center of Pan-African Thought, and Mama Tanya Safa Akuma of the Sankofa Repatriation Assistance Exodus Alliance will also ask questions, along with myself and Brother Richard. I think we have 15 minutes, Richard, if I'm not mistaken, to ask the Secretary General any questions in reference to what he talked about or the body's assessment or feelings towards the, what was it considered, the sixth quadrant, if I'm not mistaken, Richard?
Sixth district.
The sixth district. So that'll be aired this Sunday on Time for an Awakening Media at 12 o'clock noon. And then later on that evening, we'll be airing at our regular time at 7 o'clock. But I wanted the listening audience to know to tune in to Time for an Awakening this Sunday, also Saturday, because the Black Reality Think Tank will be airing the women's program from 4 to 6, and also the Elders Speak will be later on that evening from 6 to 8, if I'm not mistaken, on that Saturday. But Sunday is the major address by the Deputy Chair of the African Union in relation to what was spoken about at the UN and presented in behalf of blacks living here in America, African descended of our people living here in America, was addressed before the UN, and he'll be addressing this on Time for an Awakening Media, also the Black Talk Radio Network, on Sunday at 12 noon. The Deputy Chair of the African Union, Kwasi Kwarte, will be with us on Sunday. It should be an interesting discussion, Richard, and I'm kind of anxious to see some of the things that he touches on during this address, and see where the questions go. I'm really really interested in this. This is something that's groundbreaking, I think. Right after their address from the UN, they're going on independent black media to talk to our people in reference to what they did. That says a lot to me. What do you think, Richard?
Hey, yes, you know, and I was looking up some things, and I realized that before it was the African Union, you know, it was the Organization of African Union, and in 1964, the African Unity, they had an African Unity resolution that was condemning racial discrimination in the United States. Now, this is 1964, right? And then in 1994, they had the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. So the point that as, you know, out of the global African, continental African states always were raising this point of the discrimination that existed in United USA as it relates to, you know, Africans, displaced Africans here. So it's just interesting in this moment in 2020, the continuous push to, bring the point up of, you know, creating the alignment between, African states and what is happening to us as African people in the United States. United States being a country that is always pushing on other countries, other nation states about their human rights violations and their, the discrimination within the populations within their countries. And here, kind of always overlooking or always need someone to show the kind of, state abuse that United States has been placing on African people from its origin. So yeah, I'm also interested to see and hear how this exchange and take advantage. I don't know if this is appropriate, but Elliot, I think that we should take advantage of this opportunity as African Americans in the United States to create the relationship you were saying, as far as he wanting to speak to Black media or through Black media to not just speak to Black media, but to speak to African Americans in, you know, United States through Black media, and let us be the arbitrators of communication, the network of communication, which we should take advantage in bringing up how we're, you know, we should want to continue our relationship with the continent, not just as tourists, but in dealing with issues and policies that affect both of us.
Yeah, that you know, all of those things are going to be involved. I'm trying to think of some things that I'd like to ask him, because you know, I'll be asking in behalf of a lot of our listeners and people right. that are listening right. questions that would be on their mind that they would want to ask, and then I'm going to ask things based on what he says during his address. But like you said, this is an opportunity, and it tells me a lot when 54, because you know, they're not acting alone. He's not just arbitrarily coming to us. All of these things have to be discussed in the body politic. 54 countries that's involved agreed for him to do this,
mm-hmm.
and to go to independent Black media, not just Black media. He could have went to I don't want to mention names of other Black media. He could have went to any of them.
Right.
He decided to go to independent Black media. BB Toomey is facilitating it, and the Black Talk Radio Network and Time for Awakening is involved here. So this tells me a lot. It tells me something about the mindset of some of the people that we're dealing with. All of the people that's there on the continent are not house Negroes or neocolonialists or working in behalf of European people. We've seen some of the people that's involved over there. Arakana Chinaboy Akwayo was on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about what they're doing and what they have agreed to as far as the African Union and some of the other leadership that's there. I haven't heard from Brother Kwate yet. We'll hear from him Sunday. So we'll get a more of a feel on what's really going on, not what we see on the television or what is shown in Western media with them trying to hold on to semblances of power in those countries. We see what's going on. We see China is there. We see the UN, U.S. still has a presence there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something else going on under the behind the scenes, under the current, a groundswell of people rising forth. So hopefully we'll kind of get a feel of what's going on. I think it'll be an interesting discussion, Rich.
And, you know, Elliot, it's really and maybe you're bringing out the other side of my blues in the sense of the, you know, blues is you can have that down and you can have that joy all at once, you know, because this, as you say, that groundswell of the shift, you know, where the continent is actually does have a vision in itself, even in this 2063 plan, to have a intercontinental relationship, you know, to try to deal with the vestiges of neocolonialism, but just as important as even in this moment of this, you know, this moment of Juneteenth, right? This moment of liberation of, you know, African people declaring, acknowledging their liberation. I'm calling it liberation. They say freedom, right? But if it wasn't for African people engagement in the Civil War, the course of that war would have been different.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because of the reason of the organizational bodies. I mean, the president, call him Lincoln, or the generals. African people were fighting for liberation from the beginning, right? Just gave the opportunity, and that's what we're seeing in this Juneteenth moment, right? Another opportunity for us to create the linkages, not just romantic linkages, but real communication linkages, which means organizational linkages, and also negotiation linkages. You know, the thing of the Sixth District, the one thing that it was established to be a body for Africans in the diaspora. But it was, the article is for continental Africans. So this gives us the opportunities, those of us in North America and all in the whole diaspora, to be able to put forth to that AU body that we need a seat at the table, at the continental table, as Africans, because of these abuses that we're having here. So maybe, you know, ideally and whatever, we need to petition, lobby, suggest, negotiate with the African Union to create another district seat for those of us in the diaspora. We're asking for dual citizenship or citizenship, you know, to the continent. We're always been advocating, a group of us, that we want to repatriate to the continent. So we need to have a mechanism to be able to sit and actually not necessarily have them react, but actually assist in dealing with this discrimination activities that is going on, the abuse, the consistent abuse that's going on by United States official officers calling police, right? We need to have, you know, and we need to have the power mechanism of a continental state, 54 countries, you know, as our backup, as they're doing. And so this gives the prelude to that. And I think it's important.
Well, I agree with you. And I'll always keep in mind, and I know that you will also, when Dr. Quayle was on the program and talked about how they formed that sixth district for the diaspora. But we, in order to take that seat, so to speak, Richard, she mentioned that we need to be organized.
Exactly.
We can't do it haphazardly and 10 people leave and 10 right. or 2 people exactly. say, I want to leave. Yeah, it don't work like that. That's chaos. We need to be organized. She stated that. If they created this mechanism for the sixth district, which is children of diaspora, which includes the United States or the Americas, period, which is Central America, the Caribbean, and South America. If this was created as a facility or a mechanism for us to come home or do things that we need to do politically with a body politic, then we need to be organized. Mm. It's not going to work any other way.
And that's why, you know, this moment, this moment of liberation, this moment in Juneteenth, because, you know, and we'll get into it later, is, you know, I can go off, Elliot, but the point of, you know, after that general raid, you know, read that article to those people in Texas, and they celebrated, you know, was that 2 years afterwards, they got the general order number 3, right? Mm-hmm. You know, 2 years afterwards, right? They got that order. And it just, when that Major General Granger, he gave that order, you know, it's just, they celebrated, but the day after, they took care of business. As you say, they organized, they built churches, they built schools. These are people who were directly in chattel bondage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right afterwards, they created institutions. And I'm just saying that because that's an example of when we talk about, if we're going to do this, if we're going to use Juneteenth as some benchmark that each state and within the United States that we're going to quote unquote celebrate, we have to look at the historic, because are we building institutions now? As you say, can we go to the AU and just say we need a seat to represent, so that we can be represented and not be organized?
I don't think so. No, you're right. That's not going to take place unless we're organized.
You know, and the question is, in that moment in 1865, they did, the day after and the years after, they did get organized. They got so organized, they had to create a paramilitary body call it the Klan, and create governmental policies
to deal with them. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that, and that's something too that, because I want to get your assessment, Richard, and also the listening audience, about things going on now. If you use history as your barometer, and history is always our best teacher, something is wrong here. It doesn't smell right. It doesn't pass the smell test for me. Mm. Now, we see that a lot of states all of a sudden is declaring Juneteenth as a national holiday. I think it's a push now to make it a federal holiday.
Right.
Something wrong with that picture, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mm-hmm. I'm not even talking about from the European standpoint. That, let's put that to the side for now. Let's look at it from our standpoint. My mind goes back to that collage of voices that I play on some of the breaks. And Khalid Muhammad, in one of the things, and I'll play that in one of our breaks just to refresh our listening audience with it, if I play the right one. When he said, I'm a slave. And then he said, you're a slave. And he said, unless we admit that we are slaves, we'll never get free. You remember when he said that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, Richard, mm-hmm. why do we wait till Europeans want to acknowledge Juneteenth and then have major celebrations around these cities? We could have done that a long time ago.
Yeah.
Take off from work, not work, that to recognize our ancestors for whatever they did. We don't have to wait for these people. We're not slaves. Something like this. Why do we have to wait for this big to be acknowledged by Europeans? This paternal paternal relationship that we have a tendency to slip into dealing with these people. They are sons and daughters of our former captors, and they have a vested interest and a vested mindset to continue this system the way it is, with minor changes, with cosmetic changes. And listen, we see now that this whole thing now has got them to kind of fast track some things that are really, really window dressing, to be honest. To me, I think it was a global embarrassment for the United States. And when we talked about this earlier, you said the West. I didn't put that in there, but because Europe is right along with them. This has been a global embarrassment for them.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing this stuff has been going on, they know it. But when the world sees this type of stuff now, it's a global embarrassment. Now, all of a sudden, Juneteenth is a holiday. We're going to nominate some black pictures next year to the Academy Awards. We won't call it Uncle Ben and Aunt Jemima no more. It's been that way for 130 years with all type of stereotypical pictures on these boxes. We're going to take them off. You know, all types of old window dressing. Netflix, we're going to give you $100 million. We're going to give it to some of these black colleges. All of this stuff, your shell game, three-card Molly. You know, if you're in town, Richard, and you see them guys playing three-card Molly, and they say, come on over here. Come on, you can win. Some people go for it. But most blacks don't want to play no three-card Molly with nobody, because you're going to always end up the loser. Well, so far in our dealings with Europeans, our people have ended up with the short end of the stick.
And as you say, I mean, the question we should be raising is that, you know, not question we should be raising, because we have to be speaking from a sovereign thinking or strategic thinking perspective, right? I mean, that's where we are at this point. When in this moment of June, we have to like raise that question. Okay, what's going on? As you say, what's going on here, right? You know, and speak to your embarrassment. Now, the United States of America supposed to be the most advanced country at this moment in time on the planet, and it lost over 130,000 to a virus.
Mm-hmm.
It put out of work 40 million people. And you look around the Southern Hemisphere, especially on the continent, that number don't raise that high. And the doctors that were being able to cure, looking at Cuba, were able to send people places to assist. And they still trying to figure out how to help here.
And keep in mind, Richard, you got a country that is almost, and it might be worse than we think, that has almost been brought to its knees and a shot hasn't been fired. Mm. See, a lot of people, oh, this great United States, they can blow the world up 10 times over. They can send weapons to space and all this other stuff. But what is happening now with the unseen virus that's killing people, it's not a shot has been fired. And this nation is almost ready to be brought to its knees. Don't have to do no shelter. If this thing flares up again, don't have to do no shelter in place. This is going to be hell here in this country because these people ain't going to want to go back inside. You see, they don't want to do it now.
Yeah, right, right.
This place will be an anarchy. This place will be an anarchy. And then those prophecies by some of our people that left messages for us, we might start seeing where some of these things are coming to pass, because with our minds. We say, oh, this man can't be defeated. He said, we'll never do nothing against these Europeans. We're going to always be in this situation. And you see what's happening. Well, it's a door open for us to really start rallying around one another and really start organizing. This is a huge door for us. He realizes it. That's why he's trying to do damage control. All of this is about damage control. He realized he's losing his grip on some things, and especially you. You're key for him even now. We're still key for this man even now, Richard. And we're not in chattel enslavement. We're still a key cog in this guy's wheel. He needs you.
I mean, it's, you know, the thing, as you mentioned about the driving to his knees, and it goes to, and I wish... No, should I say I want the Time for Awakening audience, if nobody else, to understand why it's so important for us to stay centered in our own history, even when we make our analysis. Because it was African people in North America whose approach to deal with warfare, revolution, was a nonviolent revolution. Now, I know they have said... And our shining prince, Malcolm, has said, you know, you can't have a nonviolent revolution. But the history of African people in North America, the changes, most of the changes has occurred from a nonviolent revolution. The Civil War would not have been won if there wasn't, as Du Bois characterized it, the general strike. 200,000 Africans walked off the plantation. 200,000.
Yeah, but go ahead. I'll finish your thought.
That ain't even dealing with the ones who signed up to fight. That was war strategy.
Certainly.
Right? And here, as we talking about 2020, and we talk, is it... Brother Floyd, or is it the white imagery in the front, or is it the frustration of African people because of the public health conditions that we're in and the virus showed, magnified.
Certainly.
It magnified. We're dying at a higher rate. We are suffering
at a higher economic rate as far as being in jobs that really calling us, what they call it, first responders, right? Putting us at a greater risk. We're the ones that's feeling that crunch. Those young people are feeling that, right? First, so the older people are dying at a higher rate because of our health morbidities. The younger people are in the cannon fire of an invisible gun because of the economic station that they're in, right? And out of that, took to the streets. When you talk about the embarrassment and look at the repercussions. And that was, now they talk about the stores that got broken in, but that was mostly a non-violent revolt. That's historically African people. Because if you look at Europeans, even Europeans, if you go through the history of Europeans, every time Europeans wanted to change this government, the quote unquote laboring class picked up their gun.
Mm-hmm.
Only African people didn't pick up their gun. I may be wrong. The listening ones can correct me if I'm wrong.
In certain cases, you're right. I mean, yeah, in certain cases, you're right.
And look at this. And that's why we have to think strategically. And as you say, we have to organize. Because this crack, they're reshuffling.
Oh, certainly.
They're trying to get control.
Yes.
This is trying to get control.
Clearly.
This is damage control for them.
Clearly. Now, let me read something. And I got some callers on the line. Before I do that, let me read something. When I mentioned about the using history. And you know, Malcolm mentioned it years ago when he said we've been bamboozled, we've been took. Let's look at this, Richard, because to me, now I might be wrong. I think it was a couple of pivotal moments here in our experiences here in this country where we can really take a look at. That was after that Civil War and during the 60s. Those are pivotal moments. That so-called policy change happened for our people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now let me just read, and I'm just gonna scratch the surface a little bit. Let me read something here. This was the Civil Rights Act of 1968, enacted on April 11th, 1968, is a landmark law in the United States, signed into law by the United States President Lyndon Baines Johnson. During the King assassination riots, 110 cities burned with riots in 110 cities across this country. So the nation was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And they signed this law basically days after King was killed.
Mm.
It says, commonly known as the Fair Housing Act. Which was meant as a follow-up to the Civil Rights Act of 1964. This is a different legislation than the Housing and Urban Development Act of 1968, which expanded housing funding. While the Civil Rights Act of 1866 prohibited discrimination in housing, there was no federal enforcement provisions in the 1968 Act expanded on this previous act and prohibited discrimination concerning sale, rental, financing of housing based on race, religion, national origin, and since 1974, sex, and since 1988, disabilities. So, like, everybody's in the mix now.
Mm-hmm.
The act included, now look at what the act included, an anti-riot act enacted Section 18, which made it a federal crime to use interstate or foreign commerce routes, such as crossing state lines or using the mail or phone calls to incite riot, organize, promote, or participate in a riot or to extend activities of a riot, or aid and abet any persons performing such activity of a riot. The provisions have been formally referred to as the H.Rap Brown Law. Since the arrest and trial of H.Rap Brown in 1967 for carrying a gun across state lines. Now, this is included in that 68 Civil Rights Act, so the Fair Housing Act, which was a three-card molly because redlining went on right after that.
Right.
So
and before.
Exactly. So how was this three-card molly? Now, this is just one act that was enacted right after that. Those riots and the city's burning, because when Moynihan, or when Johnson asked Moynihan to do that paper that he came up with, they came up with all these reasons why blacks was rioting.
Mm-hmm.
So then they come up with this law. But in that law, they contain a anti-riot act, or they called it the H.Rap Brown Act. I've never heard it explained that way, but if you look it up, that's what it says. Now, the Civil Rights Act, check this out. The Civil Rights Act of 1866 declared, now look at the hypocrisy in the act. In the language period, right in the beginning. I ain't even talking about in the meat of it. Right in the beginning here, let me read this. The Civil Rights Act of 1866 declared that all people born in the United States are legal citizens. That means they could rent, hold, sell, and buy property. It is meant to help former slaves who was refused rights. And if you refuse rights to ex-slaves, you are guilty and punishable under law. The penalty was a fine of $1,000 or a maximum of 1 year in jail. The 1866 Act provided no means to enforce the provisions. Walter Washington, who was the mayor commissioner at that time in Washington, D.C., during 68 when the city was burning. It says, Mayor Washington made nightly appearances during the riots, and these appearances were credited by many in the city with helping dampen the violence during the time. In addition, he refused Director J. Edgar Hoover's commands to shoot at rioters on the ground, saying it would be needless slaughter and he avoid harm to civilians. But J. Edgar Hoover's speech since then, or talk since then, reminds me of somebody now. But I'll leave that alone for the time being. Let me finish that again. The 1866 Act reversed, the 1866 Civil Rights Act reversed the 1857 Supreme Court ruling in the Dred Scott versus Sanford case, which had held that because of their foreign ancestry, native-born free African Americans were not U.S. citizens and thus had no rights to sue in American courts. The act also sought to override the infamous Black Codes enacted in southern states, which restricted the freedom of African Americans and allowed racial discrimination practices such as convict leasing. The act guaranteed all citizens, regardless of race or color, protection of their civil rights, such as the right to file suit, make and enforce contracts, to buy and sell and inherit real estate and property. However, it did not protect their political rights, like voting, holding public office, or their social rights, ensuring equal access to public accommodations. This apparent glaring omission was actually the intent of Congress at the time when it introduced the bill in the House of Representatives. Now Richard, I want to read that again, and I want the people to understand it. Because Dr. Claude Anderson and several people talk about that 1866 Civil Rights Bill. You've heard that, right, Richard? And you've heard them express that.
Right.
And they read the language to it. So when you hear Claude Anderson and them talking about that, I want the listening audience to check it out if they hadn't read it. But I just want to read this one paragraph, and then I'm going to shut up and go to the phones. It says, this apparent glaring omission was actually the intent of the U.S. Congress at the time. When he introduced a bill in the House, Representative James F. Wilson of Iowa summarized its purpose as follows. It provides for the equality of citizens in the United States in the enjoyment of civil rights and immunities. What do these terms mean? Do they mean that in all civil, social, political, to all citizens without distinction of race or color should be equal? By no means can they be so construed. Do they mean that all citizens shall vote in the several states? No. For suffrage, it is a political right which have been left under the control of states, subject to the action of Congress only when it becomes necessary to enforce the guarantee of a republic form of government. Nor do they mean that all citizens shall sit in on juries or that their children shall attend these our schools. The definition given to the term civil rights is very concise. It is supported by the best authority. This is civil, which means have no relation to the establishment, support, or management of government.
Mm.
So this was a joke in the beginning, and they knew it. They were playing a game in the beginning, just like in 68 they played a game when they signed those fair housing bills, and the redlining still run rampant even to this day.
Hey.
We got to look at history when we're dealing with these people. This is not a racist statement. Oh, Brother Ellis, a racist. No, I'm a realist. Look at history, and you'll see that it's something rotten. I'm going to use this term that they love to use, rotten in Denmark, although we're not in Denmark. It's something that don't pass the smell test. Now, we can keep believing these people all you want. Oh, it's an epiphany to come over white folks. Oh, they really see the error of their ways. Okay, you can believe that. I don't. You don't have it. If somebody that believes that has no basis in any fact to come up with that assessment, only on what they believe. I come up with the assessment based on past facts.
And you know, I'm going to make, Elliot, that crystallizing was crystallizing in this moment in two areas. Black people, African people are crystallizing that we need to get repaired. The government owes us. The public opinion around reparations has grown, and the organizing around reparations has grown. That is another fear part of why they need to get control.
Well, right? Wait a minute, Richard. Well, I don't agree with you. Because when they take Uncle Ben's face off that rice box and Aunt Jemima's face off that pancake box, that's your reparations, right?
Wait a minute now. No.
Well, that's what they think.
Telling us.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Just like you read that, this is what that 1960 was, that 64, 68. It was supposed to deal with something but what we're saying, we want the government, just like the government is sending out $600 billion or spending $7 trillion to try to, you know, keep itself from going under. We're saying we want, didn't we hear just this week, what's his name?
Robert Johnson
was saying $14 trillion. Professor Darity and them are talking about $14 trillion as a means of repair.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming out. That's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have enough housing units to service the people within the district. That's not no reparation repair. You're supposed to supply, have employment, job job, educational development, skill development. That's not repair.
Mm-hmm.
The money that goes into that, that's what's supposed to be done anyway.
Yeah, for any, supposed to be for any citizen.
Right? So you're talking about beyond that, that and beyond. And the sentiment is there, and the organizing is beginning around that. And then they said, well, what about if we give you Juneteenth and take Uncle Ben off the table? You don't need no rice.
Yeah. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we got some callers on the line. We'll go right to the phones. You can get involved, too, in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're in Freestyle Friday mode here on Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. As other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Now you preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you of the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine. Your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again.
Damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party, still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation.
You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:12 here on a Friday evening here in City of Philadelphia, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call, and we'll talk about it. And you could do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Richard, we got a couple calls online here. Let me go to a couple of them and see see what's going on here. Caller, what's your name? Where you calling from? Caller?
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard? This is Brother Maurice.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
How you doing now?
You know, first of all, I want to say thank you to both of you brothers, because, you know, I don't think people recognize or realize the work that you've done over the years and how we should appreciate it to open the minds and enlighten and to educate brothers and sisters around this nation, man. I just want to salute you brothers, man. I really love y'all. And I don't use that word lightly, my brothers.
You're doing the same thing. Black men screaming ain't no joke, man. When I finally realized who you were and was invited up to the studio up in Brooklyn, myself and Brother Reggie at the time, you had already been doing what you're doing for, I think you had been doing it for 10 years at that time.
Yeah, we in year 22, brother. But,
okay.
You know, the struggle continues, and I just have a few things I have to say, because you brothers hit on so many things, and I hope you just give me a little bit of time to say some things.
Go ahead.
First, starting with the stuff that you talked about with Africa, I was so glad that you brought that issue up, because, as you said, the media has been silent on it, man. The television's definitely been silent on it. And one of the things that we've been doing on Black Men Screaming is we've been reaching out to brothers and sisters across the pond. I've been talking to brothers in Africa and sisters in sisters in Europe, and they wanted us to know. And I want the listeners want us to know that they want us to know that they are in this with us. They actually have been pushing. If you do see some stuff, Al Jazeera does have stuff out there showing that they are in the street protesting. And then one of the sisters reached out to me, Khadija Sissay, because she lost her cousin in 2015 in Scotland to police violence, whatever his name was, Sekou Bayal or whatever. And they over in Scotland running crazy protesting now, trying to get it reinvestigated. His sister just put up a video, which I'm going to be showing in my show next week, or whatever talking about the incident, and they had 9 police officers that had him down on the ground or whatever, and he died and stuff, and then they tried to say that he excited himself, and that's what helped to help him not be able to breathe. The other thing that I wanted to hit on was when we were talking about this idea that, you know, you played a clip with Reverend Wright just saying, God damn America, or whatever. And I just want to also bring up something else because we're talking about the area of Chicago. I wanted to acknowledge, because the Chicago Crusader did an excellent article acknowledging our ancestor, Brother Conway Worrell, who just passed or whatever. So, you know, we want to make sure that people understand, you know, the great work that he did with the Black United Front and all the different organizations he was involved in. Again, we want to acknowledge, and I love the title that they gave to that article. It said African to the very end. And I love that. We love Professor Worrell, and we deeply going to miss him. And the reason why I went back and started looking at him, because, Richard, you could appreciate this. I was going back over an article he wrote when Starsheets McIntyre had died or whatever. And they were talking about, you know, the criminalization of a race, the book that she wrote. And right. Then I said to myself, you think about this. Now, if you went online, like young people ask me about it, I said, well, you can find a book online. I went online and I looked. That book is only being sold by Amazon. You know how much that book costs? It's written 1993, $116.
Get out of here. I
said, yeah, on Amazon. I said to myself, so at a time where this would be a perfect point to show some of the brilliance that she talked about, whatever, that she imparted into that book, talking about the criminalization of race and dealing with some of these issues that are going on right now, you got to pay $116 for it. I look for it. They do have it at the Schomburg. Remember, I'm in New York City talking to you, but it's only for you to read there. You can't even take it out. So this made me think about that, about some of the things you talk about. We have to have control of certain things because there's no reason a book that's 20-something years old should be costing $116 and we can't even print it so our people can get it and read it and be enriched by it. The other thing that, yeah, I told you I got a few things up, so I'm not going to get too crazy, but
take your time.
You know, the other thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about Africa, and again, I want people to, I say it again, brothers and sisters are reaching out from the continent and from Europe to say they're in support of us. They love us. They're in support of us. Matter of fact, the piece that they sent me, they said that they're angry about it. And they have a right to be angry about Black death in America and on the continent or whatever. And they want you to know that they're with us. Now, they're reaching out to us. And so I think it's a great work that you're doing on Sunday. Now, you said something else when you talked about that brother from Iowa. And this, you see, I listen very carefully when you talk. When you talked about the congressman from Iowa, whatever, and you talked about the Civil Rights Act. And then it made me start thinking about all of this conversation that's going on about correcting things. People forgot back in 2012 in Iowa what happened. In Iowa, there was a case that was brought, an implicit bias case with 6,000 Black employees of the state of Iowa brought a case against the state for discrimination, implicit bias discrimination against them. You know, the unconscious stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you can't prove the you can't prove it outright, but unconscious. I want to know if that's going to be going, if people are going to go back and revisit that particular situation. And the other thing that I have to mention is that, this is before the Supreme Court with Doe versus is Doe versus McKinson, whatever, one of the Black Lives Matters leaders. Now, look, I'm gonna just tell y'all this, right? Okay. I'm not caught up in this whole philosophy of Black Lives Matter because my life mattered way before there was any such organization that got funded by George Soros or whatever. I was in a 2-hour argument with a brother over this whole issue because I said to people, I said, you, I don't want to come out of the civil rights movement like and have women benefit from what Black people pain was. I don't want to come out of this movement and have us not gain anything and have other people benefit from it. It's that people are capturing the narrative and they're changing it.
Mm-hmm.
My freedom, my rights, my ability to be made whole is not tied to defunding the police. That limits the argument. This is the whole society that is responsible to pay, and not just a check. Because like James Taylor said, reparations is having the government on your side like it's on the side of white people. And that is what we should be talking about. And not connecting just to defunding the police. It's a weak argument. And that's an argument that somebody else had. Any black meeting that I went to in the community, whatever, we ain't never talked about defunding the police. Where the hell would that argument come from? It didn't come from us. So people need to be aware of that. The other thing I want to say also is that, and I talked about this the last time I was on, we talked about how America, those brothers that you had on, those gifted two brothers you had on, I can't remember their names, we talked about America and we talked about Africa and the America being involved in Africa, and I talked about how China's involved in Africa. But you know the thing that's funny about it, like that law, the law that got America going was the AGOA law, right, which was passed by was underneath Clinton, right? This whole idea of AGOA, where now they were going to go into Africa and they were going to be there to help stimulate the economy and help African countries grow. And it did absolutely nothing for all of those black African farmers and people that are over there. So we got a couple of things. I want people to be watching carefully with this case with Doe versus McKeeson. And he's a Black Lives Matter leader. And it's dealing with a protest that went down where a police officer who didn't want to give his name, who he sued the person who organized the event. And they're saying that he should be responsible for whatever injuries that might occur. And I said to myself, this is interesting because it's not so much about Black Lives Matter. This is about civil protests in America and how they're going to try to use the laws to make people become accountable for what other people do. This is a very important case, and people need to be watching this. They need to be watching this. They're running around into people. And this is another thing that got me mad. I don't know if you saw this. I was watching this program on TV. And they had one of these people that was one of these Black Lives Matter protesters, and he was on there, and he was, you know, he was screaming they were screaming Black Lives Matter, and everybody in the crowd was screaming it. And then he started screaming Black Trans Lives Matter, and nobody didn't say anything. Then he had the nerve to go online and put up a post saying, you know, they didn't want to say Black Trans Lives Matter. I said, hold a second. What we're talking about, you don't have the right to use my black body to push your agenda. I don't give a damn if people don't like it. You don't have a right to use my black body to push your agenda and expect people to just fall in line like lemons or whatever because we're supposed to be down with what you're pushing. That's why I loved it when you did that segment because we had a conversation before and I talked to you about Black Lives Matter. They might have done some good work, but remember, they came out of the movement from who? Oscar Grant. When Oscar Grant got killed out of San Francisco, that's where they came from. That's where she hashtagged it online or whatever. And I'm not going to let people hide behind my black body to push their agenda. Hell no. Hell no. It's not. I'm not going to stand for it. I'm not going to take it. And I don't give a damn. I think I told somebody again, I wouldn't give a damn if not a white person marched with us out there. If it was all black people, I would have been fine with it also. Because this was never about what you wanted to define. And please don't allow them to define our struggle. I'm very angry. And this is another thing, Richard, I'm going to mess with you now because I love you, brother. I want to mess with you. This is the thing I was thinking about because when I was listening to Shawnee McIntyre, she was talking about epitology or whatever. And if people don't know what epitology is, that means the root of something, right, where something began at. And then, you know, I thought about it, and I got a little bit bad about that. I'm like, hold a sec. Epitology is a Greek word. Why are we using that to talk about what the root of something is? But we know the root of something came from Africa. Why are we using that? Their terminology for that. So, yeah, James Turner, I had to go back. I had to go back and look at James Turner and Shawnee McIntyre and a couple of the different brothers and sisters that were just talking about some of this stuff. There's so much rich stuff that is online, my brother. And the thing is, the thing that I love about you, Richard, is because of the work that you're doing and stuff, is to help people be educated about the work that is out there. It is there. And the last thing I'm going to say, and then I'm going to get off, one of the things I asked one of the brothers, and this is the thing I ask all the people, when we want to educate white people about the black struggle, what do you tell them to read? Where do you send them to? You know, what do you tell them to read? And what is out there right now that is sufficient to be able to educate them about the black experience in America? Something that's comprehensive. Now, I'm not endorsing this. I just thought about it, and I said to my man, I said, somebody asked me the question. I said, the only thing I know that has been produced recently, that and it was over a year ago, was the 1619 Project. I don't know if you remember that.
Right.
1619 Project or whatever. That's the only thing where they got together all of these scholars and people that wrote individual papers to show the global aspect of racism and the systematic destruction of people of color and the impact of it. Just like they said, racism is I'm trying to remember, it's a health condition for us. So again, if people ask you that question, all you listeners, all your white friends or people that are not black, they don't understand what this is about, tell them to look up the 1619 Project. And there's video online, because it's a two-hour project online for that, and the piece that they did with the Smithsonian, as well as with the 1619 Project was produced by one of the few things that they actually did right, the New York Times and stuff. So that's all I have to say. I'm glad you brothers allowed me to say it. Stay strong and stay black. Peace.
Hey, yeah, Maurice, I'm looking up. I got your message. I'm gonna get. I don't have that number, but I'm gonna try my best to get it for you.
Yeah, I appreciate you, brother. You know that.
Okay.
You know, we staying strong in the struggle. Stay strong and black. Peace.
Talk to you. Richard, he said it was a protest and they was hollering Black Lives Matter and then somebody hollered Black Trans Lives Matter and nobody said nothing. You know, let me read this because, you know, you got a lot of our people that's sincere out there and get involved in movements because, you know, they're concerned about the community, but they might not know what's really behind it. And I'm going to their website. Let me read it. And it talks about Black Lives Matter, but I'm going to read the planks that's written down here. This is the initial statement. Black Lives Matter was founded in 2013 in response to the acquittal of Trayvon Martin's murderer. Black Lives Matter Foundation, Inc. is a global organization in the U.S., U.K., and Canada whose mission is to eradicate white supremacy, build local power to intervene in violence inflicted on the black communities by the state and vigilantes, by combating and countering acts of violence, created space for black imagination, innovation, and centering of black joy. We are winning immediate improvements in our lives. Now, that initial statement sounds good, but here's the plank here. The first plank. We affirm the lives of black, queer, and trans folks, disabled folks, undocumented folks, folks with records, women, all black lives along the gender spectrum. I don't know what that means, the gender spectrum, Richard. Our network centers on those who have been marginalized within the black community. So the first thing it says is that we affirm the lives of black, queer, black trans folks, black genders, all blacks along the gender spectrum. You know, the only genders I know is male and female. I don't know what the other gender spectrums is, but that's what it states here. So when you got those people involved and they holler Trans Lives Matter or queer, black queer, whatever, you're going to get that because that's what the movement is about. It states it clearly. And I'm not saying that everybody involved in it is for that, but it comes with the territory because that's one of the planks for that particular movement.
And the thing about these I'm gonna call them these boutique political formations. That even if they call it, because look at the countries that they're representing, right? And this, you know, it's still kind of like a European centered group. And as you had spoken earlier, the financing that they're getting, right? But the made that in the purpose, it's just to deal with violence. Our struggle is not just to deal with violence. You know, our struggle is to deal with creating a livelihood of a liberated livelihood for our own freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And no matter where we are. It fits into this here, you know, I'm equating that even as a political movement, because no one is giving black people, when we talk about political parties, no one has given black people $10 million, no black political party, to be self-governing, to push the policies that deal with the redlining or the health disparity or the educational system. I mean, to create, no one has financed that. But this boutique stuff, and what, the Supreme Court just had another decision, you know, that took the term sex and, you know, kind of expanded to a meaning. Now, when it was, I mean, that's coming out of that Civil Rights Act, right?
Yeah.
Of discrimination. And they really just went and they lazily focused on defining sex. Now, when they came up with it in 64, what they're dealing with now is not the same thing that was dealing with 64.
Absolutely not.
When they were saying sex. It was about family, because it was dealing with black people as a people who are being systematically discriminated and needed some kind of protection. Now, you know, that's in order to be able to flourish in this society. So flourishing means not just dealing with the violence of state violence, is dealing with the economic violence, is dealing with the medical violence, is dealing with all of black people are under as a people. And that's why I call it boutique, because it's for a particular group, like DACA, right? It's for a particular group in order to satisfy a particular need in the society and add to its political base. Legitimizes political base, right? And I think that we, you know, the one, you know, in the future, I think we need to expand in looking at this strategically as far as black people. What are we when we? I mean, I want to tie that to, you know, this whole thing of Juneteenth, because what are we defining freedom as a people, not the issues that we're dealing with. What do we define freedom as? Because, Elliot, I think it's two different times. And when you look over that civil rights era, you have presented to us the point of how those men and women, and even in Texas, 2 years later, how they define freedom. And that was creating institutions that would create a quality of life that would provide them what they thought would be the right to be citizens,
mm-hmm,
in this society. It wasn't all about just protecting them from state abuse. It was about creating a space. And then some of us were saying, knowing that without no real power, no power tied to other nation states, unless we have a global connection, unless we make sure that we're connected to the continent and they got our back, or connected to Haiti, or connected to the Caribbean, or connected to Cuba, or connected to Brazil, unless we have a relationship on our own. And this ain't something that just come up out of air. I mean, Martin Delaney went to Brazil. Frederick Douglass went to Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this ain't no new thing for us, but we have to strengthen that and have to navigate through all those traps that's being established, because these guys is dealing with, they going down and they need to figure out how do they keep their most precious commodity,
yeah,
which is black people,
yep,
under control.
Under control. Yep.
And still be able to use them in a global arrangement. And a global arrangement means if you can get them to be able to create relationship with the continent in their interest, then they ain't got to do that.
Yep. They'll use a black face.
Exactly.
Yep. Let's go to, let's grab another one. Let's go to 602. 602.
Good evening, Brother Elliot. I'm Brother Marcus.
Yeah. You sound far away, Brother Marcus.
You hear me better?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to piggyback on what Brother Richard was saying. You know, because what they're trying to do, they're trying to pivot us from...
Wait a minute. It's kind of bad now. It's, you're not on the hands-free, are you?
No, I'm on the phone.
Okay, go ahead. I hear you a little clearer now.
Okay, so what I'm saying is the focus now should be reparation. That's what the call is, reparation. Not school teeth, not a holiday, not defund the police. Give me the money. Show me the money. That's what the hell is, you know. But nobody talking about that. They ain't talking about that, you see? And that's what you need to say after that question or two. Reparation for black people, okay?
Wait a minute, Brother Marcus. Well, then who's, just like the brother that just called out of New York, who's throwing all this stuff up? To take Uncle Ben's face off the box. Take Aunt Jemima's face. Defund the police. Yeah. Who's bringing up all these narratives? Just like he said, he's been to plenty of community meetings, and he's never heard those. Okay. All right.
White folks bringing it up, but we supposed to take the handle from them. You know what I'm saying? We take it back. It's reparation. That's what we want. That's what we should keep putting in their face. When they talk, hey, give my reparation. Give my reparation. Just keep that on. Just keep focusing on that. Because a lot of our problems, you know, come from our economic condition. A lot of the problems we face as a people comes from our economic condition. And before the pandemic, we only control 0.02% of the economy. So you know after the pandemic, it's probably going to be 0.002%. It's going to be worse. See? So that should be our focus. Maybe you need to bring that brother back, Dr. Darity back. Keep that reparation in their face, because that's what we want. We don't want to hear nothing else you have to say unless, hey, wear my check, like Martin Luther King said. He says, when I go to Washington, that's what I want to hear. We're here for the check. That's what we want, Ben, Joe Biden, is the check. And if you ain't saying the check, I don't want to hear nothing else you got to say. Anyway, good brother, take care and thank you.
Thanks for the call, Brother Marcus. You know, he raised a good point, Richard. I just saw on, I think it was Wall Street Journal, one of those publications, that after this pandemic, their estimates is 40% of black businesses going to go by the board. Right. Did you see that, Richard?
Yeah.
40%. Now, just like you said, we only own 2% of businesses in this economy now. Mm-hmm. 40%. Mm-hmm. Man.
And that's
they talking about some Uncle Ben,
about.
Take Uncle Ben off the box and mm-hmm. add a couple of movies so the Academy Awards can vote on some black, all this other stuff that don't have nothing to do. Black people think this is victories. These people playing chess, and some of our people playing checkers. Well,
and that's why it's so important for us to be able to think strategically, because even in the discussion, I mean, to take advantage of that, brother saying as far as the Africans in Europe, and the European countries and Africans on the continent is like looking at us and saying, you know, we feel your pain. You know, we identify with your what you're going through. It's on us to translate that, and therefore, this is what we need to do to give direction. Yes, it's good to have the debate about the violence. We know about the violence. What we need is the relationships within ourselves and with those in the diaspora. In order to, because as you see, these here in the end, just using the business thing, in the end, we're still not going to have no employment or no business opportunity that can create employment, because we don't have no wealth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll shut up on this, Elliot, but you know, I'm when we're talking about reparations. The thing that is important while this because they're, you know, the reason they're playing chess is because they're in a global conflict at the nation state, the geopolitical level. But we have to be able to figure out how to create a body that can supply us our needs, even if this thing fall or not.
Yeah.
That's our challenge. And we can only do that by what you said earlier, by us being organized. We are not going to do that by using the value system of individualism and being competitive or being ego-ridden. We're not going to be able, as a people, matter of fact, we'll be picked off using ICE, being individual, being competitive, or being ego-ridden. We'll be picked off, and we'll be, the two generations from now will be in the same situation that we are in, worse, because they'll be in the house, locked up, worse than what we, those of us who grew up on welfare.
Wow. Let's go to another one. Let's go to 215. 215.
Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How you doing?
Yes, sir.
I'm glad y'all brothers doing well tonight. I don't know where to begin. First, Brother Elliot, look like you, Brother Elliot, and many sisters and brothers in the Delaware Valley. From what I heard, they're going all the barbershops and salons will open up the next Friday, the 26th. I don't know if you heard that, Elliot, or not.
Yeah, I did hear that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And to you, Brother Richard, I was thinking about you, Brother Richard, because you know they said that some of the money that they were supposed to be diverting from the police fund supposed to go to the African History Museum on 7th Arch, Richard. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they mixed on the Terrestrial radio station today. I mean, actually yesterday that several hundreds of thousands of dollars supposed to go to the African, which is fine. I mean, because like I said, the museum can use all the funding they can get. So any way they can get it, you know, whatever, you know, I'm cool with that. You know what I mean? So, but that's what I just thought I'd bring it to your attention, Richard, and yours, Elliot, you know, because in case y'all brothers hadn't heard about that. And matter of fact, Richard, as you know, the museum's going to be having a program by Juneteenth tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think I read that in the Tribune today and stuff. Yeah. You know, I get before I get back with more serious issues, Elliot, Richard, as a little. For a little bouquet, my brother Jay in New York. I just was watching the TV. His good friend Perm Daddy. I see him down in Tulsa. He was speaking at a church tonight in Tulsa, Oklahoma, because the idiot's supposed to be speaking at tomorrow, but his hate rally tomorrow. The idiot, you know who I'm talking about. And Perm Daddy Jay's buddies. He was speaking. He was looking dapper. Jay should take a picture with his cell phone. Perm Daddy had on the gray suit. I think he had like a beige tie. He was looking quite dapper, like you put him in GQ magazine, Elliot and Richard.
Yeah. Okay.
Perm was looking sharp tonight, like he's going to hit out on a hot date tonight. I know Jay going to say something, get on Perm Daddy. But yes, it's just so much going on because, like when Brother Marie said, called earlier, you know, like, and I mentioned the same thing to you, Brother Elliot, before I said that, look, I said, no question about that. I said that, yeah, with Black Lives Matter, like any group out there, I could call Wall Street some years ago. You got good sisters and brothers out there that want to do well, and they mean well, and they got good intentions. But like you said to Brother Maurice Elliot, some of people don't realize that while their intentions is good, others among them have a different agenda. See, why their agenda might be just to do right by our people, and they sincerely love our people and everything they want to do right, whether it was with Occupy Wall Street or whether they with Black Lives Matter. But it's that hidden hand that's out there with their own agenda. Because like I said, you said, Elliot and Richard, a sexual thing is that's something that you choose to indulge in, whether you want to be a transgender, gay, lesbian, whatever, you know, that's your personal business. But you, like Brother Marie said, that's not something you push, you use Black people struggle, and because our skin is black, it's evident when we outside, we black, you know, we are blacks, so we can. That's something we can't hide and deny. But see, you can hide your gender, you can hide your sexual stuff if that's what you into and stuff. You can keep that on the down low unless you just want to come out the closet, so to speak. But like you said, it's unfair for you to push that on our struggle and try to make that a legitimate struggle with ours. If you're a consenting man or woman, you want to indulge in that kind of lifestyle, that's your choice, you know what I mean? But don't use that as, like, you know, as something like to say that's a civil rights struggle of the 21st century and stuff like that, when black folks are here catching hell 24/7, you know what I mean? So, I mean, that's the way I look at the situation, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it's something that I always have an issue with and everything. You know, they want to use our people's struggle to push their own agendas and stuff like that. Yeah, and Ellen, you mentioned Al Jazeera, because I got a DVD that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan made several years ago, about maybe 7-8 years. He was speaking over the Al Jazeera television. He was talking about the wickedness of America. He was interviewed by a Muslim journalist on Al Jazeera television. And the minister just broke it down so nice. He was talking about the United States connection with Israel, how they work together and pretty much in concert to oppress, you know, darker peoples of the world and stuff like that. Because Israel do their own stuff over there in Israel to our people from Ethiopia and other, you know, darker skinned people over there. So they pretty much the kindred spirit of one another, you know. So I mean, it's just the beat just goes on and on, and it's madness, man. It's just crazy, man. It's just and they don't stop, like you said, in the midst of all this going on with the protests, and the protests are well good, but like you said, we shouldn't rest on our laurels, because like you said, Elliot, they still killing our people every chance they get. That hasn't stopped. Police violence has been running amok unabated, in spite of with all the protests going on. You finding brothers and stuff home, you know? I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on. And Elliot, and I say a couple more things I get off when you mentioned Brother Elliot and Brother Richard about the Angel Mama and the Uncle Ben stuff. Again, that's like you said, Elliot, they play, these white folks play chess while we play checkers. And you ever notice the white folks, and I mentioned this on terrestrial radio station the other day to one of the hosts, this is what they do. Whenever white folks admit a wrong on us, you ever notice, Brother Elliot and Richard, they never offer compensation? Mm. They always come with these fake-ass apologies. Oh, we just sorry. Like I heard the white boy from Angel Mama, the CEO. Oh, we apologize to African-Americans. We realize, we know over the years it's been insulting, the stereotypical image of your black people, all this yang-yang stuff. But in no time that white boy said, well, you know what? I think the families the family of that woman, image that we use, she should be compensated royally. They never say that, you know what I mean? And another example you can compare to that, Ellen Richard, is Henrietta Lacks, you know, the sister who they used her genes for medical science. To this day, her family ain't got a cent, but they can name a damn building after her. What the hell is a damn building good when her family's still dirt poor? Her family, and I said this was the restorator, Ellen Richard, her sister, Henrietta Lacks, may Allah be pleased with the sister and grant her paradise. Her family, her descendants should never have to work again in their life. Her family should be so financially set. And this is stuff, Ellen Richard, that the Congressional Black Caucus should be doing. They should be pushing like hell to make sure that Henrietta Lacks' descendants be financially set for the rest of their life, so when their children, their unborn is born, they don't have to work again in their life. So they don't care about some damn building because they name a building after her or whatever. Like, who cares? You know what I mean? Give that some compensation, man. And white folks, that's the shell game, Ellen Richard, that white folks always do. When they get caught up in their stuff and they make these fake-ass apologies, they never come back and say, we want to compensate the black people. And then I get another example and before I go. The white boy, the singer, what's his name? Robin Thicke, right? The R&B singer. As you know, a couple years ago, he used one of Marvin Gaye's songs, and he used one of Marvin Gaye's lyrics from his song in his song. So Marvin Gaye's estate said, look, man, you just can't use this song without compensating us, you know, paying Marvin Gaye's estate. He barked again. It's like he felt as though he was being singled out. And they said, hell no. So they went through court, and I think the way it was ruled, I can't remember how to found about that he was ordered to pay Marvin Gaye's estate money. I mean, this is how white folks think. This is how they think. They can just use your image, your likeness. They can use your deceased relative's DNA, like they did Henrietta Lacks. They can do all these things. Use Aunt Jemima's image. They probably stole the damn recipe from Aunt Jemima as well, from the sister that they used, because she was probably the original one that came up with the recipe. But they feel they can use all your likeness and all your imagery and don't pay you nothing. And they think that's okay, so they can come back years later with a bogus apology and say, "Well, we're sorry, Elliot and Richard, we didn't mean it. You know, we was wrong, but offer no kind of money." You understand what I'm saying?
Mm. Yeah, well, listen, that those images, whether it's Aunt Jemima or Uncle Ben, that wasn't an individual. That was any of our ancestors that worked for these people in their house, sure, cooking their meals, whether it was man or woman. Mm-hmm. That was their image.
That's right.
Your grandmother, my grandmother, your great-grandmother, they was Jemima to these people.
Mm-hmm.
Or Uncle Ben. In fact, if your name wasn't Ben, they called you Uncle Ben or Uncle whatever.
That's true.
So, you know.
And there's more reason why, like you said, you're right, it's not so much an individual thing. That's why they should offer black people as a whole, they offer us compensation as a whole, because like you said, they could use any black woman during that time is the so-called Aunt Jemima image and stuff, you know. But again, that's their whole game. They never offer no cop. I always read both, like Bill Clinton, when I close with this, Ellen Richard, they was talking to Clinton about the slavery, and he told the white folks, well, you know, slavery was wrong, and then they made this bogus apology to black people. And so he said, we apologize again. But when the reparations came up, Bill Clinton's got tongue-tied all of a sudden. When it came about some kind of financial thing, what any kind of reparation, whether it be money or whether it could be, you know, like Brother Marie said, through some kind of educational reform, whatever, they bark at stuff like that. You know, they always come with these bogus apologies. Like I say, say, keep your apology, man. Give our people some money. Give our people some land that we show deserve. I don't care about your apology, because like I say, it's always empty apologies and stuff. They, like you said, they in the shell game they plan on it, when they doing this thing with Aunt Jemima, they just going to rename it and come up with another name, but they still be making money off the name. They, you know, they might change it and change some words and stuff in the thing, but the bottom line, the CEO of the formerly Aunt Jemima or Uncle Ben, they still going to be raking the millions. They might have a different name, but they're going to still rake in millions. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know, it's just like these people play games with our people, man. It's three-card Molly with these people, man. Three-card Molly, you know. But anyway, Richard, thanks, man, for y'all time, man. Let y'all go so I can talk to somebody else, man. I'm enjoying the show and enjoying the callers. And I'll sit back and check out the rest of the show.
Talk to you.
Hey, I'll put me on mute, brother Elliot.
All right. Mm-hmm. Let's go to 267. 267.
Hey, good evening, Elliot, and good evening, Richard.
Hey, so
what's up, man? How you doing?
Good. All right.
All right, man. You know, it seemed like a couple of my neighbors just all of a sudden decided to start playing with fireworks.
They've been playing that around here for about 2 weeks now.
Yeah, I guess they're celebrating the 4th of July or something, man. No, Juneteenth. They're celebrating Juneteenth, so... with fireworks. Unbelievable, man.
You sure?
And it just started. Well, what else could it be? It's July 4th in here yet. So. Man, and they start like 10 o'clock and go on to about 12 or 1, even on night, you know, work nights. You know what I mean? It's unbelievable, man. But I can't believe it. But, you know, what I called for, because I wanted to, you know, we had, like, some phone disruption. I didn't hear anybody bring it up yet. Now, also, I missed what book that brother was talking about that costs $120-something and you can't even take it out the bookstore. I didn't get the title of that book. What book was that?
I think it was Charcy McIntyre, The Criminalization of the Race. I think that's the title. Charcy McIntyre.
I'll say, if I had a copy of the book, I would mail it to the brother if you get his. But I don't have that book. So, but anyway, let me read y'all something that occurred this week. Now, what happened? You know, my daughter, she said that she could text me, but she couldn't call me because there was phone disruption. And come to find out, it was AT&T, it was Verizon, it wasn't just my phone carrier. And, you know, so happened somebody sent me a message. So I went to, you know, Google settings, if you got an Android, and you look in Google settings, man, they put a COVID-19 notification in your phone. This is a particular type of app that you can download to your phone. And if you get near somebody that has COVID, it seems like, from what I'm reading, the signal strength from that person will get in your phone and let you know you're being exposed to COVID. Now, how in the world are they, you know, I'm going to read it to you. Let me read it to you. This app can, and it's in your phone. That's the reason why our phones is going in and out. The app can notify you if you've been near someone who reported having COVID-19. The date, duration, and signal strength associated with an exposure will be shared with the app. Your phone uses Bluetooth to securely collect and share random IDs with other phones that are nearby. Random IDs are automatically deleted, as they're telling us, but I've worked on some of those databases they have. They're not deleted after 14 days. If you have COVID-19, you can choose to share your phone's random IDs with the app so it can notify others anonymously. Device locations need to be on to detect Bluetooth devices near you. However, COVID-19 exposure notifications don't use device location, so they're lying to us. They already have tracking by your cell phone and by your smartwatches, man. And, I mean, a lot of people, you know, because all of us was like, what's wrong with our phones? They didn't give us no clear cut. They were adding this stuff to our cell phones. Did you get a disruption, Richard?
No, I didn't. Couldn't call. But yeah. A lot of people I know did. I think that was early in the week.
Yeah, I think it was like Wednesday or something. Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah. There was like two days straight. I mean, you would call somebody and wouldn't even get a ringtone. They were adding the stuff to your phone now. And then when I called my phone provider, they gave me some kind of crazy answer. Our cell towers are down. But this is what it is. Now this thing shows up in my phone. And, you know, but they said the cell towers are down. We're being randomly tracked now. And with this new thing with 5G coming out, they're going to sharpen up this facial recognition. As you see, with a lot of the so-called looters in the neighborhood that the cops just allowed to run rampant, sit right there and watch them, because one of the young guys even said, like, come on down here, the cops ain't doing nothing. And they was allowing them to break in these stores and everything. Well, they're testing out this face recognition, man. So this thing is deep. This thing is deep. And the whole thing behind 5G is facial recognition to get in and out of certain buildings. I mean, this thing is, we have to, like, find out who are these people pushing this. While all this was going on, you know, you see, like, and I know our brothers and sisters, they're celebrating Juneteenth and BLM and certain things about the chokehold, which is murder anyway. The chokehold should, you know, is abolished, and certain cops appear to be getting fired. Man, I look at all this stuff. If you know this double like I do, you know for a fact this is a setup. What? I don't know. I haven't put my fingers on it yet. But this whole thing is a setup. You have young white people spraying BLM all over everything. When I go down to South Philadelphia or whatever, I see signs in the window, Black Lives Matter. That means, you know, we down with y'all. Leave us alone. I mean, I don't, man, we're being set up, man. And I don't know how it's coming, where it's coming, but it's coming. And, you know, Brother Marcus was saying, reparations is not even being discussed, but it's given to a parasitic group like BLM, you know, that's pushing They already told you what their agenda is. It's just that our people don't read. They said the way to hide information for most of us is to put it in a book, but now you can put it on web pages. So, you know, I don't know, man. And we, you know, me and El, I'm looking at one of these commercials right now, one of these pharmaceutical commercials with, I mean, we're getting bombarded with black homosexuals on TV advertising these pharmaceutical drugs that pose it. It's just mad, man. I, you know, and this is the only place that I could call, like, vent, because if you talk about these pharmaceutical companies pushing these commercials, they say it's hate, and you can't, and they'll hang up on you. Mm-hmm. And we're all in this together, and all this while Hispanics are up there in Chicago murdering our people, you know, that's not being reported. It's been going on out L.A. All you got to do is Google Hawaiian Gardens and you'll see an article called Ethnic Cleansing, where they targeted black families to clean them up out of certain Los Angeles County neighborhoods. So, you know, I mean, man, you know, it all looks good if you listen to the news and you know, your antennas start to go down in your head. But mine's staying up. Matter of fact, mine is growing because I don't trust them. And they proved to be untrustworthy. And they're not mentioning reparations, which they're not going to, you know, they're not going to, you know. So they'll give you a little holiday like Juneteenth, you know, where our people, you know, had to learn from them that they were free. And we're still not free. I mean, those of us that are honest realize that they can run up in your house any day, put the cuffs on us, and take us to prison if they want to. So this is our freedom, you know. That's why some of us are looking at other places to live. But, you know, the powers that be with this 5G and this facial recognition and this tracking, you ain't safe in those other countries either. You could think you might be sovereign, but as long as you take one of these little tracking devices, what you call a cell phone, you ain't free. You know what I mean? So, you know, I just had to call and inform the listeners. And look at your phones. Go to settings. This is for Android users because I don't have an iPhone. But go to settings, go to Google settings, and it's right there in your phone. Mm. And they want you to install this app so they can track you. But how do they know this other person has COVID-19, when they swabbed them or when they went in the hospital, did they put something in them? You know, I mean, all these things we have to ask ourselves. How do they know?
Well, they they mentioned the other day these NBA players they're supposed to start up in Orlando. They want to issue them this. It's a ring. It looks like a wedding ring, a wedding band, but it's a band that they want them to wear. Because it monitors whether it monitors temperature fluctuations, and they'll you know that'll bring them in because they're going to be tested for the COVID. These guys is playing; they don't have it for people in the street, but they'll have it for these players. You know, because they're making millions of dollars. It's an investment for these owners, so they're going to provide them with this ring that they wear, and it'll monitor their body temperatures. And if somebody's temperature spikes or goes up, then I guess they'll bring them in for testing. But that's what now I don't know about the thing on the phones, but I know that this ring that they're issuing all these players is supposed to monitor, and it's like an independent, the team owners or whatever don't do that. It's this independent medical agency that's going to monitor the temperatures of all these guys through the ring. So it's going to be electronically or whatever.
Well, they got a watch out now that does the same thing.
Okay.
But, yeah. But did you read where five Phillies and three of the staff, they know for a fact they're infected? See, when they talk about we're going to be hit, you better listen to these people carefully. When they talk about there's a second wave coming. And you see what it targets us. You know what I mean? If what I'm getting from the news media is true. It targets us. So I don't trust these people, man. I don't trust them. I did go get tested. I got tested for the antibodies, and I got tested just to see, and both came back negative. So that means but I wear a respirator out here. I ain't playing with it. You know what I mean? You know, I have a family I got to come home to. So anyway, you know, I just had to call in, man, because we better keep our eyes open. And they said this thing is spiking down in Florida and all, but you see all them people on the beach. You got this big Trump rally tomorrow. you know they ain't wearing no mask because their leader told them they don't have to. They're going to be all crammed up in there.
And he don't wear one either.
So they asked him, like, all right, you got all this mouth, you got all this heart. All right, well, you be in there with no mask with them. So they all going to be crammed up in that place in Tennessee. I think it's in
Tulsa.
Where they going to head it?
Tulsa.
Yeah, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Yeah, they're going to be all crammed up there, man. So tomorrow we better keep up.
He said he's getting them to sign a waiver when they come in that they won't sue the government if they get it over 19. You laughing. That's what he said. Did you see that, Richard?
Yeah.
He's going to provide a waiver for them to sign. I'm telling you.
You know, I mean, you know, they said a second wave is coming and they're going back to green. And I'm glad for certain ones of our businesses. Some of our businesses just been behind closed doors and they've been open the whole time. Because, you know, they got to feed their families, man. You know what I mean? But, you know, but on one token, we don't even know what we're up against. We don't know if we're being sprayed with this stuff. We don't know. We only, and we know. Those of us who've been around for a while know not to trust the stuff that comes from the blue tube. All that's BS. That's just the third arm of anarchy. Am I right, Richard? The third arm of anarchy. That's what they call the news media. So, you know, it's part of that military arm, man. And we got to watch ourselves. You know, and the thing about it, I'm watching our young folks, man. I thank God for their courage. But we gotta watch out for our young people, man. And they have a right to ignore the stuff that we've been bombarded with, like walking across the Edward Pettus Bridge and getting our brains knocked out and all. They got a right to be. I mean, what kind of is that something to be proud of? Walking across a bridge and getting your now, if they walked across the bridge and they fought a bloody battle, that would be something to be proud of. But not just going across there and getting your brains knocked out. You know what I mean? I'm just not with that, man. And so our young people have a right to question some of the tactics that have been used by that generation before us. So, you know, I just had to call in, man, and, you know, vent about this stuff. And I always repeat what Malcolm X said. Self-defense is not violence. Self-defense is intelligence. So I'm going across a bridge and I know what's on the other side is going to beat my behind out and I don't defend myself. Well, Malcolm said it better than I could. So, you know, I'll just leave it at that, man. You know, self-defense is intelligence. So, you know, arm yourselves, do what you got to do to defend yourself because a second wave is coming and it's going to come in disguise. So I just wanted to leave you guys with that, man.
Well, you know, listen, before you go, that's the narrative that they put out that all of our people, you know, got hit, you know, like John Lewis. But that's not exactly true. Well, you know that when we had Charles Cobb.
Well, I know it's true.
And you heard Willie Ricks. He said he ain't. He said he would knock the pills. You heard him, Richard. He said he'd use a brick, anything to knock. He said they shot a couple people. He wasn't playing.
What? Well, this guest has been on your show, and I have his book downstairs, We'll Shoot Back. You know what I mean? I forget his name, but I got the book right downstairs, We Will Shoot Back. He talked about that.
He talks about all the people that was involved and things of that nature. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I forget his name, but I.
Yeah, Iconelli Emoja.
So I have that book downstairs, and I got the book by Robert Williams. I mean, you know, so it's not all what we get from the third arm of anarchy, but you know, I'm glad our young people have taken up that mantle and starting to wake up and realize that these people that are in charge are not our friends. And if Biden gets in there, you can look for it to step up, because that means a certain percentage of us will be put to sleep. You know what I mean? They're happy that this one guy is gone and they got their friend back in the White House. And that's all the discussion that I hear now, and especially if he gets Susan Rice, or if he gets Kamala Harris and he gets a black woman. But, you know, if you realize every time they get a black politician, that black politician ain't nothing more than an overseer to keep you in check. That's all that black politician is. So it's nothing to celebrate if a Kamala Harris or Stacey Abrams or Susan Rice or any other of those puppets get in there. Even Michelle, I'll say this, and I know people give, even if get your homegirl, Michelle Obama, get in there. Boy, that's when they got us, and they're coming. And that second wave is going to hit. So, you know, I'm just going to keep it there. I'm just going to keep it there, man. And, you know, and hopefully some of our people, you know, come out of their slumber, you know. And it's that older generation. The young people see through it. So, you know, I'm just going to end it right there. I just wanted to contribute to the conversation. And I'll just go back on mute.
Thank you for your call.
Take care now.
Let's go to 414. Are you there?
Hey, Elliot. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, Brother Richard. How are you?
All right. How you feeling now?
I'm doing well, brother. I'm doing well. Seemed like a call when most of the callers saying that y'all, and you two brothers too, y'all can't pull nothing over on us. You know, you can't hide nothing on us. I came across this was pretty interesting, the Juneteenth flag.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And honestly, I remember seeing the Juneteenth flag probably, I don't know, 10-some years ago, something like that, in a glimpse, and I just forgot about it. And then it was brought to my attention that the Juneteenth flag, I think someone from Juneteenth had the concept and idea, a brother named Ben, there is a brother, I'm not sure, Ben Haight. He's the founder of the National Juneteenth Celebration, but the Boston-based illustrator, Lisa Janae Groff, is a European Jew, you know, mm-hmm. And she's the one that helped, as it says here, brought it to vision, although it has been revised. And they do give a breakdown. Have you seen the Juneteenth flag?
Yeah, I've seen it.
No, I haven't.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying, man. A lot of people have. It's red, white, and blue. There's a blue on top and a red at the bottom, and it's an arc shape, and there's the star, five-pointed star in the middle, and like a burst on the outside in white, you know, like a corona. I don't hear that name, Corona, you know. But, you know, we got a flag. But it's okay. You got Juneteenth flag. I tell you, have you paid attention to how much emphasis and how much attention has been given to Juneteenth? In fact, you know whose fault it is, right? It's Donald Trump. He said he made Juneteenth famous.
Stop.
Nobody knew anything about Juneteenth, but he made it famous. Nobody knew about Juneteenth. Donald Trump.
Trump and his, you know, him and his medication, I don't know.
I hear you. So they've added a few things. They add the date at the end of the flag, you know, going vertical, June 19th, 1865. You know, I honestly, I mixed emotions about it because it's like, I'm going to celebrate, you know, them Caucasians getting 2.5 more years of free labor out of our people, you know. Like Malcolm said, if it doesn't take anything to get your rights, shouldn't take anything to get my rights, you know. Shouldn't be no amendments and constitutional changes and all that stuff. So. But anyway, gentlemen, I thought I'd bring that to your attention. You guys have a blessed night.
Yeah. Okay. You know, one thing that you do raise in bringing that up is that the wondering as we move to, I think it's next this year, this August or next August, 100 years of the making of the red, black, and green flag. Will the Juneteenth flag replace for black people the red, black, and green flag?
That might have been some folks' intention, huh? Is that what you're saying, Richard?
Yeah.
We will see. Thank you for your call, Brother Oji.
All right, my brothers. Peace.
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 Let's go to 646.
Swing low, sweet, high, sweet cherry D. Listen, I don't want to upset y'all too, but I just got a question I got to ask both of y'all. Do y'all honestly really think the white man going to give us reparation? Do you think over the last 2 years, where it seems that the reparations have been in the forefront on a level that just haven't been seen or heard, do you think we pushed the needle to the point to where as the narrative has really changed, honestly, other than the fact that these devils now just want to pander? I mean, the reality is, I'll show you pandering at its highest disorder. This Negress, Kamala Harris, and Toby Booker talking about they want to do a Juneteenth bill. Now, come on. Let's stop. Seriously, people. Let's stop. Why are we going to allow two Negro peen Master Yorugu lovers to play us like this, knowing that the daddy ain't even going to fall for this BS? I mean, it just comes at some point in time. When are we just going to say enough is enough and figure something else out? Instead of allowing these people just to toy with us, to play with us, to shuck and jive with us, to buck dance with us, to do all the necessary things to put the Negro in the frenzy. I mean, seriously, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. The white man only gives up a sacrifice when they have to, just like this devil that killed the brother in Atlanta. One is going to get spanked a little, and the other one's going to get spanked. Now, depending on how he gets spanked is who's going to be on his jury. Because now if they're going to go with protocol and the law and things of that nature, he got to get convicted on at least 7 of the charges. The main charge, I don't know. I think he'll walk on it just because of the nature of, you know, he's a white man. But then again, you got to also look at the point that he kicked the man and that he used those words that they got on tape. I got him. Or we got him, or whatever. You know, so that may play an integral part in his conviction. But, you know, he's a sacrifice. And we always get these sacrifices. Look at the sister that got shot 8 to 10 times in her own home. Gave you one. What about all the others that were there? What's happening with them? They still on death duty getting paid? Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they managed to charge one guy when she was shot 8 times. One guy shot her 8 times in the bed. I mean, all those bullets that was been fired into that home. How they managed to charge one guy?
Well, they say he shot 10 shots. So it must be on the amount of shots that he shot. But I mean, you know, at some point in time, when are we gonna stop allowing people to jerk us around
and
manipulate us?
When we start organizing more effectively than we are right now.
Okay, well, that's a start. I agree with that. Because I just had the fall down in stitches when the Neanderthal said he done done more for Juneteenth and made Juneteenth more popular than it ever was. I mean, that right there is the height of arrogance, narcissism, white privilege, and just crackerism. I mean, you gotta really, really have some cojones to make that type of statement. And then the thing that makes it even more is that nobody checks them. Nobody puts forward a narrative in regards to, what are you talking about? We've been celebrating this for years. We can run off states where they celebrate this on a regular occurrence, where it's a real deal. Just because you are racist and you don't know nothing about Black history or culture, that doesn't mean that it's not celebrated. It's just like this whole narrative about Biden and this psychopath. Honestly, how could you expect Biden to win this election when the narrative is on the level to what it is? How are you going to make a narrative that the savior is a black woman? And then the black woman that you got ain't worth a damn. What are you doing to bring out young people? What are you doing to bring out men? What are you doing collectively to put forward a narrative, or this is what's at stake, this is what needs to be done, yada, yada, yada? You can't even get the Negroes that's supposed to be the political strategists, the so-called thought merchants, the gatekeepers, to come together and put together a narrative to build on what needs to be done in the black community.
You don't think the anti-Trump narrative is strong enough for those demographics?
No. You don't even got to finish it. No. Because, I mean, people been talking about this character since 2000, whenever he got into office, when he came down the escalator. People don't know who he was. What he was about, the narrative ain't changed. The bottom line is the only reason he got into office is because this clown Clinton, she didn't have no respect, and she thought she was privileged, and she thought that people were just going to vote for a cracker barn. She didn't go out there to the states that she needed to go to make sure that the voters came out and do the necessary work that she lost in that allowed them to get over 270, and the same thing is going on now. So if it is, you're going to now, after all of this is said and done, going to blame black folks? Come on. And on top of that, it may be to the point to where you're going to pander to them and give them some niggerish that ain't even worthy. And you know if they're going to give you a niggerish, you know the niggerish is going to be Kamala Harris with a white husband.
You think that the Black Lives Matter infrastructure is going to support Biden?
Who?
Black Lives Matter.
But why do y'all talk about them fruitcakes?
I'm asking. Do you think that? Do you think that they?
Black Lives Matter is nothing but a smokescreen to get some money and put in the hands of certain.
That I'm just using $10 million. You don't think that $10 million will have influence on the election?
Black suffering? Get out of here. Black Lives Matter is a disgrace, a joke. I wouldn't follow a Negro if they was the head of the Black Lives Matter because I know the Negro is compromised. Oh, come on, man. Richard, you should know better, Black Lives Matter. I'm more tired of saying White Lives Matter before I say Black Lives Matter. It's a joke. These people ain't when it's necessary to play games with black folks. They'll be gone after the election. You know, the only reason this thing is at the point that it is because you got these crackers suffering now. Out of work. Not able to do the things that they want to do. It's all on top of them.
Will they be going back to work before November?
What?
Will they be going back to work before November?
Hey, listen, the majority of them won't be.
Because the majority,
if truth be told, are in that whole service industry. They just have a higher level in of the service industry, and the service industry is bust. Don't let there be a second wave, which is coming. Oh, don't let there be a second wave. It's going to really be a wrap. Because the bottom line is most of these white Neanderthals, they work in the restaurants. You know what I mean? They work in bars. They work in certain retail stores and things of that nature. and they out of work, and they ain't like they coming back to work. Government agencies are going to have to make cuts.
And they support Trump?
You know,
And they support Trump?
I would assume a majority of them do. Look at what's about to happen tomorrow in Texas. It's your life for a cracker who don't give a F about you. That just shows the ignorance, the stupidity, and the mental midgetness of those people. I mean, I hope they all get it if the truth be told. I have no problem at all because I know my black behind ain't going to be there. I know I'm not getting in no crowd. I know I'm not going to no restaurant. I know I'm not going to no department store. The closest place you'll get me is in the crowd, is the supermarket. And I go there bright and early. I'm one of the first people in there. And then I bring my black behind on home and do whatever I got to do. No, so brother, no.
Do you think the Republican Party has a winning strategy?
Hello? Jay?
Hey, I didn't mean to knock him off.
You still there? We must have lost him.
I don't think they have anything.
Your phone's going in and out.
I said, I don't think they have anything in place or winning strategy to bring people out. I don't think they got the ground game or anything of that nature.
I mean, the Republican Party.
I don't think they have the message.
Wait a minute. You're saying the Republican Party don't have a.
No, I'm saying the Democratic Party.
I said, do you think the Republican Party has a winning strategy?
Yeah, because they play on a certain playbook that makes their base sustain itself to the point to where it doesn't waver from its wretchedness and wickedness. So I don't have no problems with them at all. They doing what they supposed to do. I mean, let's look and see what the show is like tomorrow. I mean, the best thing for the Democrats is this. A whole bunch of people in Tulsa get sick, and you get to a few couple of deaths, and the media portrays it in its right perspective and puts it out there. That could be a game changer, because then it will show the irresponsibility of this devil. Mm-hmm. You know? Because, you know, the man, if you notice now, doesn't even address the coronavirus. All he talks about is the economy, and the economy is a joke. But the economy isn't real. And you can't base an economy.
I think you went out again.
Yeah, we lose your call.
You know, I mean, I can tell you this. I'm making decent money now in the market, but it could change. I mean, you know, I'm probably being honest, spending a little more time looking at charts and things of that nature, you know what I mean? But, hey, okay, I'm going to ride it for a little while. But most people ain't riding it. Most people ain't enjoying it. Most people ain't benefiting from it, if the truth be told. So, I mean, that same white trash that's going to be sitting in the stadium putting themselves in danger, they ain't in the market. They kind of think that he's going to be able to salvage some jobs in a situation that's just not salvageable. I mean, what do you think the people in Wisconsin and these other farm states, what is going to be the true narrative in regards to them? Why ain't the media out there talking to them, putting forward the right narrative about how they all going to get screwed? Hey, because you know why? The media is complicit. The media knows that what does Trump bring? Trump brings enough of rating so that they can charge better rates for their revenue and get more revenue for their ad buys. Come on.
On the ground, are the blacks in the Democratic Party less organized than the whites on the ground, those on the ground, than the whites in the Republican Party?
Yeah, no question. Because you got gangsters for the rest of them who, in all honesty, black people don't respect. Most black people know that they're nothing more than gatekeepers. They look at their community and they can see that they're gatekeepers. Their communities are doing bad. Their communities are suffering. I mean, come on. Let's keep it real, man. Jim Clyburn sold black people out a long time ago. You know, that's why my great brother, my good brother, Ralph, was talking about the Negro getting beat upside the head. I guess, you know, it's lingering effects. John Lewis, have you heard anything from John Lewis, even though I think he's on his deathbed, which is this. I don't wish death upon him, but he's a... I mean, so the bottom line is, what are they doing? They're saying to you, vote for Joe Biden. But what's the narrative? Why are you going to vote for Joe Biden? What is Joe Biden going to do for you?
Well, that's the point.
If I don't know that, and I just look at Joe Biden's history and dealing with black people and what he's done to black people over his career in politics, I couldn't pull a lever for that piece of garbage. Come on, let's be real. If you have any sort of principles and valuables within yourself about how you expect your people to be treated and how they've been treated by an individual, and then you pull a lever for a Joe Biden, you deserve whatever the F you get.
So do you think
your enemy?
So do you think that that means there'll be a surge in black independent parties by black people because of what you just characterized?
I don't know. It all depends. It all depends on what's the narrative. Everything narrative is based on the message. Whoever defines the message is the one who wins the argument. Black people haven't learned that yet. They're too busy trying to be a part of whiteness, trying to be a part of a system that basically hasn't shown them no love. So they get it conflated with the fact that there's just a small percentage of the society. But if you look at it and you step outside of the box, every other ethnic group is moving forward and doing their thing. Here it is. We're in a country now where you got freaks and degenerates having more power and more of a say-so in the direction that the country go than black people. That should tell you something. We last on the total pole. You can't tell me who other than maybe the Native Americans are beneath black people in this country. Can't tell me no one. Because no one is it. You know why? Because they have a collective cohesion of a community and a culture, and they have some place where they can call home, that they want to call home if things are right. Negro don't want to talk about Africa and going back and building Africa. But, hey, there's some people out there who are, but we not. We just playing games figuring how we're going to get a softer spot in whiteness. And whiteness don't even want your black bond. I wouldn't want you.
Well, Jay, well, let me let you go here because we running up against the fact that I'm winning a little overtime.
Hey, listen, Elliot and Richard, I'd like to thank you for allowing me to express myself and just say, look, we got to wake up. We got to get on these so-called black gatekeepers and tell them, man, you all got to come together collectively and y'all got to come up with a narrative to get the people out there if you want this guy to get in the office. You're not doing it. Everybody from the Angela Rise to the Cryberry Baby Bakari Sellers to the clowns that be on the radio and to those that be on the internet doing their thing, they got to come together collectively and say, this is what we're looking for. This is how we're going to deal with this place here, that place there. This is the message that we're going to put out in these key states that we need to get people out to vote. If that doesn't happen, we ain't going to win, as they would say.
Oh, well, you don't expect nothing out of them people. Come on. If you expect something out of them people.
No. See, that's where you're wrong, Elliot. That's where you're wrong. You got to expect something from a gatekeeper if the gatekeeper is the visible force that's dictating how black people think. Those Negroes could get on TV and rile up the crowd and make black folks think this and talk about Kamala Harris and talk about this and that. Why they don't come together collectively and do the necessary things to put forward? Why ain't Joy Reid out in the community on TV shucking and jobbing. Why she ain't got her, Tiffany Cross, and the rest of them on Zoom talking about this is what we do? Why they ain't got a closed door meeting together with one another saying this is the narrative that we're going to put forward and this is what we take in to Joe Biden and to his people?
They get instructions from Joe Biden, from Nancy Pelosi, and all those other ones. They get instructions from them. They don't work independently.
That's not right, though.
Huh?
That's not right. You can't.
Well, I ain't saying it's right. I'm saying that's what they do.
And instructions, if you the key element to getting them in office, you're supposed to be able to go to them and demand from them what we are willing to do and what we will do to make sure that you're in office. Get out of here. That doesn't even make logical sense. How does that make sense to someone that needs you, your help, come to you and dictate to you how you help them? That's like your daughter.
But that's what happens.
And telling you, Daddy, I want you to do this, and if you don't do this, I ain't going to do this, and I ain't going to do that. I tell them, go on about your effing business. And smack them upside the head.
Okay.
But we don't do that.
Well, if you expect Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and all of them to go and dictate to the Democratic Party what they want, yeah, then I don't know what
yeah.
you...
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. All right.
You know
well,
why?
Keep
because
waiting.
They're trying to tell them that they are the key element for this devil to get in the office. So I feel I have a right to ask and demand certain things as a collective.
Oh, I ain't saying that you don't have a right to demand from them. I'm not saying that at all.
Yeah, but they can't even come together to get to that point, to the fact that they're coming together as a united front. Come on, man. Let's stop playing games. No, look, Biden, Pelosi, and them ain't supposed to be telling them nothing. If they supposed to be
okay.
the star that stirs the drink, the one that's going to put them over the finish line, how you going to... Oh, come on, man. See, this is the frustration that black people have because we never want to be in a power position and tell white people, F you, I'm going to put my foot on your neck.
We never want to do that. Elliot, as I listen to Jay and I look at this general order number 3 and I see the disconnect because in the general order number 3, you know, for that the, what's that, the colonel, read to the people in Texas and said the people of Texas are informed. And this is the federal government telling the people in Texas, right? In accordance with a proclamation from the executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between employer and hired labor. Now, the shift, right? Now, they're telling them this is what you're going to be. You're no longer a slave, but you are an employer and a hired laborer. Now, who is the employer and who is the laborer? The freemen are advised to remain at their present homes. Where are you supposed to go? Nowhere. And work for wages. What you supposed to do? Take what we give you. And they are informed that they will not be allowed to collect at military posts. You can't go to the government warehouse and get no cheese. And they will not be supported in idleness. You can't be sitting around either there or elsewhere.
Now, was that 2 years before or after?
That was two years before
you were liberated?
No, that was what they read to those at Texas 2 years after the war was won, right? Now, this is a people 2 years, the war is over. And supposedly they didn't know. I can't go for that narrative. And then when they tell them, and this I'm saying this to the relationship you're saying, telling Elliot, that the Democratic Party, as far as what those people supposed to tell Biden and them, Biden and them is telling them what they're going to do. Well, this order was telling formerly enslaved people 2 years after slavery was over, that you're no longer a slave, but you're an employer. You have an employer and employee relationship.
And marriage you can't ain't be, the same, bro.
Huh? And you can't be sitting around.
Hey, listen, man, go ahead and end the show. Thank you again for your allowing me to speak. Hey, Elliot, are you going to be on Sunday and have a guest?
Yeah. In fact, it's going to be a major address at 12 o'clock on Time for Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network. The deputy chair of the African Union wants to address black folks on independent black media about what went on in the UN and why they did what they did.
Oh, okay. I will definitely tune in. So how long you think that'll be on for about an hour or so?
Maybe longer.
Okay, and what are y'all going to do? Come on after?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll be on later on that evening. Yeah, we'll be on later on that evening.
All right, well, I'll definitely tune in. Hey, listen, man, y'all have a beautiful weekend. And, Richard, man, I know you ain't back with the daddy yet. How you been doing, man? You good? Your fingers are causing trouble on Facebook and all of that stuff since you don't look at the Bluetooth?
It keeps me up at night.
Hey man, I'm glad to hear that, brother. You know, I'm glad you're all right. Just make sure you have a little bit of cognac or some Hennessy or a little bit of rum with your tea. And hey, you know, enjoy yourself. Richard and Elliot, have a beautiful night, my brothers.
Peace.
Peace now.
Richard, so we'll be looking forward to Sunday and see how things go. I think I'm supposed to try to get on with the BB tomorrow, make sure the connection is good so it won't be no snafus or whatever when we kind of go for it. But hopefully things work out all right and people get here with the deputy chair or the AAU is talking about in reference to what they did, why they did it, and other things going forward. It ought to be an interesting discussion.
Now, Elliot got me growing up here on the radio. Like now I'm on the international level.
Right? Yeah, okay, yeah, right. Also, the Black Reality Think Tank is on tomorrow. The ladies' program is from 4 to 6, and then the elders speak later on that evening. I think they're from 6 to 8, if I'm not mistaken. Dr. Rogers and the ladies will announce it tomorrow on their program from 4 to 6. So check it out on Time for Awakening Media. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday at 12 to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. To play such a small part of the thing that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little tongue.
Why can't